Tim, how's it going?
Great. Happy New Year, even though it's, you know, after the sixth or seventh, maybe you don't say Happy New Year anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, in markets, things really don't kick off until, you know, the week after New Year. So I suppose we're still on that Happy New Year time frame. But yeah, either way, thanks for coming on the show. Lots happening in Bitcoin. Corporate adoption obviously exploded throughout last year. I'm sure you have plenty to talk about there. But first things first, I think what our viewers are probably most concerned about, what they're wondering about, is why is Bitcoin struggling so much to break 100K? Obviously, we have this huge spike in U.S. Treasury yields. Trump's getting in office 6 days from now. This immense dollar strength. The S&P 500 has lost all of its gains that it made after the election. It's closed that gap. Bitcoin hasn't, but it's still really underperforming. So just what's your take, right? What's driving the current Bitcoin price action? What's preventing it from moving high?
I mean, everything you just mentioned, I think, is certainly contributing to it. But I think the super short answer is what Mike Alfred tweeted this Monday, which is 1 week to go. I mean, I don't think it could be understated that, you know, a few words here, a few executive orders there, and we could be in a totally different space from a messaging standpoint. And I think that could at least alleviate some of these headwinds that we're facing right now.
Right. Absolutely. Do you envision any major executive orders coming on day one or in the first week as it pertains to Bitcoin, or do you think these things will take a little longer to play out?
I think when you hear day one, it could be like days 1 through 10. And some of what I've been seeing about, you know, it's going to take time to actually fill all of the roles in this new administration. Like, I do think all of that makes sense and should be mindful that not everything is going to necessarily happen on day one or within the first week or so. But I do think and expect, you know, my view is that within the first couple of days that there'll be some strong announcements or pronouncements or executive orders where it really sets the tone. I mean, I'd just be surprised if within the first few days you didn't see either the president himself or members of his administration really coming out with a strong message of what they plan to do, or at least the striking the tone that they want to be messaged out.
Right, right. Gotcha. So at the very least, some strong messaging, some flag planting. That makes sense. You know, and during year one, obviously, plenty of people are talking about a strategic Bitcoin reserve. Polymarket has the odds at like 45% that it happens in 2025, if at all. Given what you've seen, given the people that you've spoken to, because obviously you have your own podcast, where would you place your odds for a Bitcoin strategic reserve happening, not just in 2025, but at all during a Trump administration?
I'd put it at 100% in some form, meaning it could be an executive order that has that in name. And it's basically saying we're not going to touch any of the coins that we have. And if we do need to, because of a legal situation, right, like they actually need to be given to the rightful owner, that they would buy to replace. I do think you're going to see it. I think it's just a matter of I'm not sure what form it's going to take initially, and then what that could progress to over time, especially if you get Congress involved. And I just don't subscribe to the view that you don't have the votes to get something through Congress, because you had Sob 121 voted down in Congress and this administration, you know, Biden vetoed it. So like, if you can get Sob 121 overturned through Congress, if you just really look on a granular level, I think the votes are there.
I think so too. Yeah, I think right now, Congress is a lot more bipartisanly in favor of Bitcoin than many people will believe. Like the Elizabeth Warrens of the world, the senator of my home state, they're being ushered out, right? You know, it's taking some time, but largely sentiment on both sides of the aisle has shifted. Obviously, more red than blue when it comes to being pro-Bitcoin. But both sides understand that, okay, our constituents, all of our constituents want this stuff. We, you know, being not in favor of this is political suicide. So I totally agree with you. You mentioned Sob 121. For the people at home who might not know what that is, if we get rid of it, it's extremely substantial for Bitcoin being integrated into the broader financial system, specifically as it has to do with banking. Would you just mind explaining what Sob 121 is, and then also, or at the very least, what the implications are of getting rid of this?
Yeah, so basically the current SEC administration that will no longer be in power as of December 20th, took it upon themselves to basically come out with a bulletin, a rule, if you will, that effectively made it ineffective and like impossible for banks to profitably hold any digital asset in their custody on their books. And so with the repeal of this rule, SAB 121, the JP Morgans of the world will be able to custody and hold, buy, sell, and trade these digital assets, which from a, I know that BlackRock and Fidelity and everybody else are involved with the ETFs, but I think that's just the next step in most of the general public waking up to, well, if you can go to your corner bank and buy Bitcoin in your checking account, that's radically different from where we are now.
100%, 100%, right? If Bitcoin becomes available at these banks, you could buy it, just like you said, using your checking account. If you have a bank account set up, you can generally have access to treasuries or a money market fund or something like that. If people can interact with Bitcoin in the same way, it's an absolute game changer. You know, one other thing that has been a game changer over the course of the last year, obviously MicroStrategy started this in August of 2020. You know a great deal about MicroStrategy. You follow them very closely. Over the last year, a whole suite of public and private companies, namely some of the bigger public names, right? Metaplanet, in the United States, Semler Scientific, and others have begun adopting this Bitcoin treasury strategy. Your podcast name obviously plays into this, right? So, where are we at on that trend? Do you think that it's picking up steam? Do you think that this is some kind of transient occurrence that's going to fizzle out in 2025? Or do you think that Bitcoin treasuries are just only going to get more popular as the year goes on?
The theme I'm seeing is that they're only going to become more popular. Certainly, companies that have a founder, a board that are closely aligned is going to be not only helpful, but almost mandatory in order to get that amount of buy-in at this point in the adoption cycle to put Bitcoin on the balance sheet. But from everything that I've heard from guests and in private conversations is that you're going to see more and more of the institutionalization of these different products, whether they're, you know, convertible bonds being made available to the retail investor, not just a private placement on a corporate level. And several companies really following in MicroStrategy's footsteps of taking not just their cash, but then, you know, potentially traditional loans or issuing additional debt or issuing preferred shares. I mean, there's just seems to be a ever growing list of instruments that the traditional market wants that you could introduce at different volatility levels in order to tap into those markets, whether it's a retail customer that for one reason or another doesn't have, even today in January 2025, like retail customers here in the United States, some of them don't have access to the ETFs because of the specific, you know, financial institutions that they have their brokerage accounts at. I think that's wild. I think you'll see some of that change, hopefully this year, as we progress. But also, of course, institutions, firms that their charter, their mandate doesn't allow them to buy Bitcoin, but they can buy convertible bonds. They can buy equity. And not just hedge funds, but insurance companies and on down the list. So I don't know if there's going to be this suddenly moment necessarily, kind of similar to Bitcoin's adoption, that I don't know that we've seen this suddenly moment yet, but I do see it increasing, definitely.
Absolutely. To your point about different, you know, financial instruments for different volatility preferences and different risk profiles, MicroStrategy, obviously, they've got their equity, they've got their convertible bonds. One new instrument that they've just, you know, released this notice about potentially exploring is preferred stock. Can you speak to the types of investors that preferred stock is targeting and whether or not this, you know, proposed, I think, 1 or 2 billion issuance of preferred stock will bring Bitcoin adjacent adoption to an even wider net of investors? Because I don't think this is understood by a lot of people, how significant it is that MicroStrategy is considering issuing preferred stock.
So I do agree that it will increase the participants because you're targeting a different audience. I am not completely up to speed on the specifics of who the usual suspects would be in that arena, but yeah, still have some learning to do on that end.
To my understanding, it's targeting the fixed income market primarily. People who are purchasing these convertible bonds, even though they are a fixed income instrument, the ability to convert them into stock means that traditional fixed income investors, your pension funds, they aren't really likely to buy something like a convertible bond. Whereas the opposite is true for a preferred stock. It has these fixed income-esque qualities. Instead of receiving a coupon, you receive a dividend. And so preferred stock is much more attractive to those traditional fixed income types, right? The pension funds, and the like. And you and I both know how big the global fixed income market is, right? We're talking hundreds of trillions of dollars. And so this is kind of MicroStrategy dipping its toe into the global fixed income market. And really, I can't see anything else other than other companies wanting to follow suit. They've seen what it can do for MicroStrategy as a company in public capital markets over the last 4 years. I don't see any future where this trend not doesn't just continue going, but I don't see a future where this trend doesn't continue accelerating.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely.
100%. So MicroStrategy obviously is now included in the NASDAQ 100, which means that, it is also a part of some of the world's largest ETFs. The third largest ETF comes to mind, QQQ, this NASDAQ 100 ETF, which means that now MicroStrategy's inclusion in this massive ETF, it's the beneficiary of millions of dollars of passive flows every single day. And during rebalancing, obviously, if MicroStrategy becomes a larger stock outside of the NASDAQ 100, its weight in the NASDAQ 100 increases. And then the amount of money that's going to be going in to MSTR through these passive flows increases. Can you speak to a little bit of the flywheel effect of capital funneling into MicroStrategy because of these passive flows? MSTR uses it to buy Bitcoin. Its stock outperforms. Its weight in the NASDAQ outperforms. It seems like a flywheel that just means that because of the massive passive flow market, everyone contributing to their retirement accounts every single week is just a recipe to send Bitcoin's price higher and higher and allow MicroStrategy to purchase more Bitcoin ad infinitum.
Yeah, I think you did a great job of kind of explaining on a high level that flywheel. And even with what we've seen recently, where Bitcoin went from 108,000 down to 90,000, let's say, you have all of this, really, it's misinformation, right? Where it's like MicroStrategy is going to get margin called and they're going to, like lose it all. And there's just all of these. The reality is, if the price of Bitcoin goes down, it's not. There's no collateral that is going to be like foreclosed upon. It's just not the way it's set up. And all of this is so not nuanced, but just intricate and detailed. And there's so many layers to it, which is why we can spend a whole hour or so talking about it and like barely touch each piece of it, that I think it's really comes back to education. I mean, if someone can't understand, it's not that they can't, if someone doesn't choose to spend the time to understand Bitcoin, how are they going to understand or let alone appreciate a corporate entity putting it on their balance sheet? And not just putting it on their balance sheet, but leverage long and then issuing a different additional shares, which traditionally is dilutive, but in this case, they're literally just turning around and buying Bitcoin with it, which is accretive. And so this flywheel, even if you just take that simple example, would over time, especially with every 4 years, the amount of Bitcoin being mined is cut in half. I mean, you put all of this ball of wax together, and if you can put your arms around even a few pieces of it, it's like, wow, this we have not seen before. And if even just MicroStrategy themselves and the follow-on companies are great, and that's a whole different discussion as far as if you're starting from a lower number, do you have more room to run, right? A company that's at 500 million, maybe that's more attractive or maybe not than a company that's already at 100 billion, give or take, and a 10x, they'd be a billion or a trillion-dollar company. It's like, well, how many are you going to be worth? 10 trillion, 20 trillion? I mean, the Apples of the world are not worth some of those higher numbers yet. So yeah, just a lot to put your arms around.
It
It
certainly
really
is.
is.
Would you
Would
be
you be
able
able
to
to explain?
explain the creative dilution, right? So obviously when you hear a company is issuing debt or issuing equity in order to use the proceeds to purchase something, they think, okay, great, my share is being diluted. And in doing so, right, the price generally goes down. But MicroStrategy, on the other hand, has been on this totally like nonstop tirade over the last 4 years of issuing debt and equity, using the proceeds to buy Bitcoin. The stock price has only gone up. Can you explain why this is and what exactly accretive dilution is?
Yeah, I don't know if accretive dilution has been a term for years and decades. Maybe it has, but in traditional markets, when you issue a different additional shares, especially if you're not using some or all of that capital to grow your business in a way that's going to be profitable extremely quickly, like quarter over quarter, the shareholders do, as you said, view it as dilutive. Your share is worth less. And so I'm hopeful that we can come up with other terms as we go down the path, because dilutive accretion or accretive dilutionness, whatever word salad we want to put in there, it's like, well, you're literally just finding a way to grab more capital and buy more Bitcoin. If over the medium to long term, Bitcoin is going up, then that's the most accretive thing, the most value enhancing thing you can do. And so if you own one share in this case of MicroStrategy, and there's, let's say, one Satoshi, for sake of example, backing that share when you do all the math, then they buy more Bitcoin. I mean, their Bitcoin per share. Instead of one Satoshi, you have two Satoshis in your one share. Not only are you getting the price appreciation, but you're getting additional Bitcoin per share, which it's kind of a newer concept. And again, once you put your arms around it, it's pretty exciting.
Absolutely. Two new key performance indicators, relatively new, being Bitcoin per share and more recently Bitcoin yield. Why has MicroStrategy adopted these into its framework? And it seems like after MicroStrategy created these, now every company, publicly traded company that's pursuing a Bitcoin treasury, is using these indicators whenever it's publishing a performance report and whenever it's announcing a new Bitcoin purchase, right? So what is Bitcoin per share? What is Bitcoin yield? And why are they used as KPIs?
So my view on why MicroStrategy is using it, and it certainly, I think, is beneficial for all of the companies to use the same metrics so that you can really communicate that across the investor universe, is you have to have a way of measuring what you're doing right now. And I don't even think that stacking Bitcoin for the next 5 to 10 years is the end game. I think that's what they're focused on right now. And you have to find a way, if it's not traditional earnings, to communicate that to the market. So Bitcoin per share on a very simple level would be you take all the shares that are active, and then you take all the Bitcoin that's on your balance sheet, and you figure out how much Bitcoin or piece of a Bitcoin you have per share at one moment in time. And if that's increasing over time, that's valuable and accretive to shareholders. The Bitcoin yield would be how much more Bitcoin you're putting on your balance sheet during a specific period of time, whether it's week to date, month to date, quarter over quarter, or year to date. So you see a lot of those announcements from MicroStrategy, and you're starting to see them from others. I have to give a shout out to Ben Workman for this thesis of we really don't think that stacking Bitcoin is the end game. That's what we're focused on for some amount of time, call it 5 years, call it 10 years. But then when you can build on that Bitcoin and you can provide products and services based on that store of Bitcoin, that's where the real magic happens. And, I would say probably 3 to 5 to 10 years away from that. So, will MicroStrategy be the best performing stock in the S&P 500 this year? Maybe, maybe not. But even if some of these follow-on companies are performing better than MicroStrategy, hypothetically, maybe in reality, this year or next year, 2026, 2027, I still think that MicroStrategy has that lead. They're the market leader with the most Bitcoin, and so you would still want to, the stock would be attractive to hold for the long term for those specific reasons if you buy into, step one is buying as much as you can, and step two is then building on it.
Absolutely, 100%. So you've spoken to a lot of business owners specifically who, are holding Bitcoin in their treasury, are considering it, or know a lot about it. What's the trend like between Bitcoin, or these companies holding spot Bitcoin and holding the ETFs in their stead? Obviously, the ETFs, they're simpler. There's less regulatory hurdles you need to jump through as an institution to hold those versus spot Bitcoin. At least I believe that's my understanding. Given that you have your ear to the ground on a lot of this, what's the trend like? Are more businesses owning spot ETFs or are they owning the actual spot Bitcoin?
My conversations have mostly, if not all of them, it seems like they're holding the spot Bitcoin and not the ETF. So, I think that's the theme that I'm seeing from the private and public companies that I've had conversations with.
Gotcha. And that's a really encouraging trend, frankly, right? Because although these spot ETFs are, a wonderful instrument for, Bitcoin price pressure, these businesses ultimately who are holding them aren't using Bitcoin the way it was supposed to, right? True spot ownership, true sovereignty, actual ownership over your private key. So that is a very encouraging thing to hear. So the rule change happened, right? The FASB accounting rule change happened. One of the major obstacles for that would prevent companies from holding Bitcoin, which is I can't value it at today's price. So it doesn't sit on my balance sheet as profit if it is in profit. That's been a big hurdle for companies who've been considering putting a portion of their portfolio into it. That has now changed. Obviously, the biggest story there is that MicroStrategy, because of this, may be included in the S&P 500. Can you speak a little bit about that rule change and its impact on, Bitcoin on the balance sheet of public companies going forward?
Sure. So the accounting treatment before 2024 was indefinite intangible accounting. So it would be similar to a baseball card or a few other examples where you have to mark the value down to the lowest point and you can't mark it up. And in 2024, companies were. Could opt into it. And then as of this year, it's mandatory that Bitcoin is now fair value accounting. So regular fair value accounting treatment. As far as how that could impact MicroStrategy's share price when they do announce, I feel like I'm falling somewhere in the middle as far as what the market reaction and whether you're going to see, fireworks or not. Because on one hand, you do have analysts and companies aware of all of this. But on the other hand, you also have a lot of algorithms out there that, is it part of the algorithm? Right? You would think maybe yes. But yeah, just how much, the bulls would say, wow, it's going to be the largest and most profitable thing in the history of markets. But, all this information is public. It's just the accounting treatment's been prejudicial. So I'd be really intrigued to see how the market responds once those actual numbers are published, if that makes sense.
100%. Absolutely. I think that once they are published, there's always going to be skeptics toward Bitcoin and a lot more skeptics toward MicroStrategy. People call both a Ponzi scheme. Sometimes even more so, they call MicroStrategy a Ponzi scheme. Of course, without knowing the definition of what that actually means. But I think that, when those numbers get published, ideally that'll help change that to some degree. Looking ahead over this next year, right? We obviously have several different things going in our favor as it pertains to Bitcoin. And MicroStrategy as well. Obviously, plenty of copycats, MicroStrategy being the OG. MicroStrategy having a fantastic treasury team that knows how to raise capital, when to raise capital. Not just for MicroStrategy, but for Bitcoin as well, right? Over the next year, the Strategic Bitcoin Reserve, other very pro-Bitcoin policies are going to be happening here stateside. That said, there are a number of risk factors, right? The extremely strong dollar, yields rising. We have Doge on the horizon, and the US economy is very reliant on debt, right? It's very reliant on running these deficits. So in the same vein that like 2025 could be a banner year for Bitcoin and Bitcoin corporates, there are also several risk factors, right, that could throw a wrench into Bitcoin's price. What do you see over the next year, right, as the biggest things going in Bitcoin's favor, some of the bigger risk factors, and then where you think we'll end up as the year unfolds?
I think you're actually going to see inflation continue to tick up, but you're going to see the messaging from the new administration on a federal level and even on a state level be as follows. Yes, inflation's ticking back up. If you want to guard against that, then buy Bitcoin. And you're going to see inflation and Bitcoin going up simultaneously, which historically I don't think we've seen. How nuanced is that? How long and for what time period, I don't know, but it seems like whether it's this year or it's bouts of inflation from time to time, there's really no way around the system besides Bitcoin. There's no way around getting keeping this in a almost maintainable stead other than inflating it away. So I just think we're in a really interesting time, especially with Trump historically looking to the stock market going up as a measure of his success. I think we'll see him continue to point to the stock market and to Bitcoin and say, "You're welcome." And especially with my theory that he's playing to legacy at this point, what else are you playing to? That's my view on what we're going to see over the rest of the year.
Fantastic. Yeah, no,
Fantastic.
I totally agree. I want to shift gears here. I want to ask about Jubilee Royalty. So what is your company? What do you guys do?
So, beginning in 2008, I have been on the land and acquisition side of natural gas and oil. So the actual specific rights are called either oil and gas rights or mineral rights or royalty rights, depending the legal definition varies from state to state. So I've worked in Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia, Texas, and New Mexico, leasing and then purchasing, leasing for clients and then purchasing for a family office these mineral rights. And when I exited out of a project from 2015 to 2019, moved up to New York. I was living in Fort Worth at the time and started Jubilee to continue basically sourcing those deals, letting them cash flow, and then exiting them in kind of a private equity model, 3 to 5 or 6 years of a hold period. And along the way, met one of the investors was very heavily allocated since 2017 into Bitcoin. And so that began my Bitcoin journey. So at this point, we have 5 closed-ended funds. We're not looking to raise any additional capital at this point, but just to bring to an exit these existing funds. 4 of them are oil and gas minerals related, and one is actually a just buy and hold a Bitcoin fund for a term of 8 to 10 years. So the thesis was, yes, you can go buy Bitcoin on your own. You should. We encourage you to. However, are you really going to hold it through this volatility? So we've created a structure so people can just HODL for at least 8 to 10 years. So that's Jubilee, and it kind of encapsulates my background, and also kind of at this point, if it's not already obvious, I would like to remain in that space, but really spend the most of my time moving forward on Bitcoin and how we can further education, further adoption.
That's phenomenal. Well, good for you, Tim. I mean, and that trend you just spoke about, I mean, what you just spoke about at the very end, wanting to spend more time in Bitcoin from the industry that you were in. I've spoken to several industry professionals, just, happenstance over the last couple of months. And many of them who are coming to me about Bitcoin are saying the exact same thing. They're saying, I want to spend more time in this. I want to figure out a way to help this industry and get out of my own, or at least, scale back my day job and work in Bitcoin or make Bitcoin my day job. I found that to be, one of the bigger trends I've seen over the last several months, right? Probably something to do with the price action, but nevertheless, the amount of people who are coming up to me on a day-to-day basis and saying, "Hey, I'm listening to Bitcoin podcasts all day at work. I really want to do this instead of what I'm doing now." Why do you think that is? Why do you think people are so driven not just to buy and hold the asset, but as you are in your case, try to make a move into the industry and then just work in the space full time, whether it's an education or something else? What do you think drives people? What do you think drives people to be like active participants instead of just holders?
I think it could be one or a combination of three things. Unfortunately, a lot of people do not like the professions they're currently in. I just think that's not a big secret. The second one would be once they understand Bitcoin and they have this passion for it and they allocate to it, there's this, flywheel, if we want to use that word again, where at a certain point, whether it's 4 years or 10 years or 20 years, everyone's preferences are different, but like they may have the financial freedom to pursue something else. And when someone is able to, from a financial standpoint, choose what they want to do, I think Bitcoin is just a really attractive field, if you want to call it that, to really spend your time in, whether it's connecting with others, education, technology. I just kind of there's a whole list of like what kind of Bitcoiner are you from a technology or freedom or banking the unbanked or all of these different aspects. Reminds me of the meme, right? Bitcoin's everything that you don't know about money, and everything that you don't know about technology, and everything you don't know about 17 different things. So, I think That's yeah, and I've received messages as well on X, on LinkedIn, of individuals. Maybe they're just coming out of college, maybe they're looking to change a career, and they're looking to come to these conferences, whether it's the Bitcoin conference or the Bitcoin for Corporations conference. But there's just more and more interest in at least learning more, but also networking and really trying to put their arms around all of the possibilities and opportunities, whether it's just sharing and connecting with people or something more professional, on the professional side.
Couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. I certainly agree that, that's why the shift is happening. You mentioned the Bitcoin for Corporations conference. You've been pushing that heavily. What exactly is the conference? I've seen it on your profile a couple of times. So who is this conference for? What kind of people are you trying to bring there? And what's the mission of the conference?
So it's a very timely question. I was actually on a call this morning with Ed Julien, who's the director of Bitcoin advocacy over at MicroStrategy. And it is really focused on Bitcoin for Corporations will be focused on the corporate side. So we're trying to encourage CFOs, treasurers, executives to attend and really drive that aspect of corporate adoption, as opposed to more of a general audience, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. One thing I wanted to ask you about as well is so recently a shareholder of Meta submitted a proposal to add Bitcoin to its balance sheet. The month prior, Amazon did the exact same thing. What do you think is behind this trend? Do you think that Amazon or Meta has any likelihood of this, actually coming to the fore, either of these companies actually allocating to Bitcoin? A lot of people over the last couple of days have mentioned that Meta may have a higher likelihood because of Zuck's recent shift, the fact that he owns, he has over 51% of the voting rights at Meta. And he's recently made this, rightward shift. Genuine or not, it is a PR strategy, it is a shift. And so he might be more accommodative to something like a Bitcoin treasury. What do you think is behind, these proposals being put forward by the shareholders of these companies? And do you think that either has a high likelihood of coming to fruition and why?
So I was surprised that Microsoft only had a 0.55% vote yes at their shareholder meeting. I thought that was pretty interesting. But to more directly answer your question, Ethan Peck is literally in the business of putting these shareholder proposals forward, not just for Bitcoin, but for many different reasons. And I'd invite people to check out either my podcast or Pompliano also had Ethan on to talk more about what he does, how technical it is that you want to get the timing and the words. It can't be over 500 words. It can't say this. It can't ask for that. Or either the company or the SEC can actually deny the proposal, and then you can't resubmit for years. And so it's a very technical process, but Ethan really is spearheading it. And I think one of my main takeaways from those conversations is that although generally, if you think about like the Microsofts of the world, it may be unlikely that they vote yes on that proposal to do an assessment of whether they should hold Bitcoin, the proxies and the shareholders from an institutional level, when you're having these conversations, they're all the same people from an institutional shareholder standpoint with a lot of these companies. So you're able to just have one opportunity after it. After another, to orange pill them, to educate them, to get them up to speed. And what Ethan has found is that there's not been a lot of education or awareness of even, what's Bitcoin versus crypto, like what is Bitcoin. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And then on Meta specifically, my personal view, and I could be totally wrong, is if I was Zuck, I'd just kind of my own accord before the shareholder vote, even comes about, just come out and say, hey, we're going to put 1% of our cash into Bitcoin. Right. Even if it's a small amount, just kind of get on board and move on and kind of, like make it something that he's proactively doing. That would be my hope. That's just my random theory. But I think that could make a lot of sense and really wouldn't disrupt anything, I don't think. I mean, I know, right, with AI and this and that, they need to have some cash on hand. But if you take 1% of it and put it into Bitcoin, I think that can make a lot of sense. And especially with this vibe shift and this new administration, I wouldn't be shocked at all if you had someone like him that had basically the ability to the votes to do it. whatever the case is for him to go forward with something like that.
Yeah. No, I think, honest to goodness, Meta being the 11th largest company, obviously Bitcoin's already a larger asset than them, but that said, or 11th largest asset, excuse me. I'm just looking at the list right here. There's Apple, NVIDIA, Microsoft, Alphabet, Amazon, Saudi Aramco, Meta, right? So they're the 9th largest company, right? By market cap. And so it'd be an extremely substantial shift. And if there were ever a time and like the perfect conditions, like the stars aligning for one of these major public companies to begin a, you know, some kind of treasury in Bitcoin, it would be right now, right? You mentioned the incoming administration. Although what's happening with Zuck might not be genuine, he's clearly trying to be in Trump's good graces. He's made this huge shift. He's saying he's getting rid of fact checkers. He's got his new hairdo. He's wearing t-shirts now. You know, he does mixed martial arts all of a sudden. And so I think even if he isn't being genuine, Trump's very pro-Bitcoin. I think if he's doing the shift to get in Trump's good graces, but also the public's good graces, one of the best ways to do that would just be to, exactly like you said, say, hey, we're taking 1% of our cash, not even remotely close to the amount of operating capital that they need. Just like, hey, 1% of our cash that we just have sitting here, put it into Bitcoin, right? Really low stakes way of getting yourself into the public favor once again. I don't see why that couldn't happen or shouldn't happen. I think it'd be a pretty good PR move that fits into exactly what Zuck's already trying to do.
100%.
Absolutely. On the horizon, right? Obviously, you're very much, you know, you're speaking to these companies, you're speaking to different leaders, you're organizing the Bitcoin for Corporations 2025 conference. What is the most exciting thing coming in the upcoming year that you see on the horizon for Bitcoin, for corporate adoption, whatever?
Do I need to pick one?
You'd say a couple.
I think we've said it, but the communication, the embrace of the new administration, both through what they communicate and what they do. I mean, even just the known, more public figures like David Sacks being out there and helping to lead that charge, I think will be really interesting. And especially with the size now that some of these corporates like MicroStrategy have, I think their ability to continue to issue additional shares at the market in a creative way, especially in just the size, I think that is just, you know, can't be understated. If you're doing, you know, hundreds of millions or billions of dollars a week worth of Bitcoin buying, even with it being a larger asset now, is just very encouraging for not just the price action, but through the price action, as we all know, the continued awareness and then hopefully education that trickles out from there.
Fantastic. Absolutely. You know, companies trying to take public capital markets in order to buy Bitcoin, there have never been more of them. Right? These new financial instruments that are coming to the fore, largely as a result of MicroStrategy's innovations. Also, Metaplanet is doing some very unique forms of capital raising. It's paving the way for other companies to do the same. To have somebody before them have already done all of the big work, like figuring out how to do this, and then it just becomes plug and play for these companies that want to do it. So the future is extremely bright for Bitcoin, for corporations, Bitcoin treasury adoption. I think it's going to accelerate over the next year. I know you agree. Tim, thanks so much for the discussion. Very laid back. I liked it a lot. I know our viewers enjoyed this too. So before we go, any parting thoughts? And then, of course, where you'd like to send people.
Appreciate you having me on. I'm mostly on X at Tim Kotzman. And yeah, really appreciate the opportunity.
Fantastic. You heard the man. Go check him out at X, at Tim Kotzman, same way that it appears in the title. Also, it will be linked in the show notes. And of course, if you're watching on X, the handle will be right there. Thanks again so much for watching. Make sure to check out Theia, the world's simplest self-custody solution. Tim, I will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Joe.